G'day, this is Linda Ross and welcome to the Garden Clinic podcast. It's great to have your company with me, and we're churning out these podcasts on a weekly basis, full of tips and tricks and information to get your garden looking absolutely beautiful. And yeah, I'm just giving you some little shortcuts as well to help you in the garden, whether it's growing the flower garden of your dreams or getting that veggie patch cranking, which it should be at this time of the year.
The best garden in the street.
G'day, Graeme Ross here. Now, you all know I love my gardening, and we all know that Sea Sol is simply fantastic for keeping your garden healthy and looking great. But did you know that Sea Sol reduces transplant shock and dramatically increases the plant's survival rate when they're newly planted? Now, look, it's like an insurance policy for your plants. So when you're planting out your seedlings and new plants in your garden, don't just water them in, Sea Sol your plants.
Don't forget the Sea Sol.
Look, at this time of the year, there's so many tips and things to do. Little chores that can take half a day. And I always tend to think of my tools at this time of the year because I'm just about to start all of the winter pruning. So it is good to get your tools out from all the places that they've ended up over the year and give them a good clean. So get all your secateurs out, get your pruning saws, and it's a good idea to give them a bit of a sharpen as well. But yeah, get the shovel and the spade out. They can definitely do with a bit of a sharpening. Sometimes the handles might need oiling as well. So spend a lovely day in the winter sun and getting out all your tools, laying them out, seeing what they need. You know, tools, particularly secateurs, need to be cleaned and oiled frequently. Oh, they're hard-working tools, aren't they? And they're especially prone to rust, particularly from sap if you've been pruning frangipanis or something, and the residue actually builds up on the blade. So the first thing I do is just get a stiff brush or a scrubbing pad and loosen the dirt from the crevices, wash the blades with warm soapy water and dry thoroughly. Then I get a little bit of lubricating oil to the pivot joints and the blades, and I wipe off the excess with a small hand towel. We've always got a supply of lubricating oil on hand, and that just helps dissolve the rust on steel blades, and it also protects the tools from corrosion a little bit later on in the season. And you also need to lubricate the moving parts before you start pruning back your hedges or all of that rose pruning that's to come a little bit late in the season. Couple of little tips. I love twine. Twine is so important for tying things up, like melons, tomatoes, sugar snap peas, or snow peas, and but it always gets knotty. So I use an old funnel, actually. I just get a cheap aluminium funnel and I nail it into the back of the shed door, and then I put the gardener's twine into the funnel, and then I just roll the twine out through the funnel end. It's great, it stays knot free, and then I can just unroll as much of the twine as I need for tying up. Oh, I tied up my dahlias the other season as well, and sweet peas are growing gangbusters at the moment. In the veggie patch, a couple of tips in the veggie patch that I wanted to communicate on today's podcast as well. Look, all of the cauliflowers should be definitely in, and the broccoli and the brassicas, cabbages and all of that. They are very susceptible to the cabbage white butterfly, but I have a really easy trick. There's a couple of strategies, but I'll go from the easiest one to the hardest. One of the wormwood, the Artemisia. It's full of bitter chemicals in the leaf and the stems, and it wards off flocks of the voracious cabbage moth butterfly, which is, of course, the curse of most of the cabbage family during the winter months in the veggie patch. So if you just dot or just break some Artemisia or wormwood off and just make your own cuttings and just put them in the corners of your garden beds, they just sort of fluff up and do a wonderful job at being a beneficial repellent, really. The other thing you can do is get one of those cheap $5 butterflies, solar powered butterflies from Bunnings or the hardware, and just put those in, and they kind of float around being driven by the solar power panel. Oh, they're $5-$10, but they do a great job because cabbage white butterfly are actually territorial. So when they see your little fake butterfly going around, they don't tend to lay eggs on any of the leaves of your cabbage family. So that's a really good one. Look, you can also, back in the day, we used to put polytunnels over the cabbage family bed and then put the insect netting all over the bed to stop the cabbage butterflies from laying the eggs. But now we've realized these other little strategies do a brilliant job at deterring them. Look, everybody's into their citrus at the moment, and the lemons and limes and oranges should all be fruiting beautifully. But of course, with lemons, you know, you do get a whole lot of problems. So it's important to give them a spray of the Eco Magic Mix that we talked about recently on our podcast, which is a mix of Eco Neem, Eco Oil, Amino Grow, and a little bit of seaweed. And that applied religiously will stop insects from landing on your citrus and causing all of the damage. But also, after your citrus have fruited, it's a really good time to get in there, prune, open up the canopy into a vase shape of your citrus trees, and that will also increase the airflow. It also promote ripening of fruit because you've got more sunshine coming into those interior branches. So if you haven't done that for a while, yeah, get in there and give your citrus sort of a regenerative prune, a big hard prune. And if you haven't done it for 10, 20, 30 years, well, then you need to do a severe prune, take it all back, open it up to a wide vase or V shape, and cut everything out of the center of your citrus trees. Look, it's a little bit too early to think about germinating tomatoes inside. We've only just finished them, but it is a good time to hang yellow sticky traps up, and that prevents white fly in the veggie patch, stops transmitting viruses, because the white fly can transmit viruses from plant to plant really quickly. So I like to use those yellow sticky traps. Well, I was just thinking, if you've got peaches or nectarines growing, you'll need to spray the stone fruit at bud swell with Yates Fungus Fighter or Eco Fungicide, or even just lime sulfur when the plants are completely dormant. In fact, lime sulfur is a great preventative spray to keep fungal diseases at bay. I absolutely love it. Sprayed over just pruned roses, of course, and all of the deciduous fruit trees. It's a wonderful disinfectant for your plants. The other thing I like to do with my tools, just quickly, is I like to, I misplace my small tools all the time. So usually I have a bucket that I put them in when I'm gallivanting around the garden. But then I make a habit of now storing all my secateurs and hand rakes and all my weeding tools as well, my little hand shovel, and I make a habit of storing them in a bucket of sand. And I just fill the bucket with clean sand, and I stir in 3-in-1 multi-purpose oil to lightly dampen the sand. And you want the sand to be sort of slightly moist, I suppose, not an oily mess, but just slightly moist with the oil. Place the bucket in a sheltered area, not in the rain. And then once you've done pruning or weeding or planting, all of those hand tools go straight into the sand. Just wash off any debris and stick them in, tines down, blades down into the sand. And the grains of sand actually help the blades keep nice and sharp. And the oil, of course, prevents the rust from forming. And it also, a little bonus there, I always know where to find them for the next day out in the garden. Lots of things you can be doing. If you're growing strawberries at the moment, it's important to actually cut the runners, sever the runners, so you're making individual plants. So you want those individual runners to be severed and those plants to develop their own root systems. That's really important, a little trick to do now. As the weather cools, it's just the perfect lettuce growing weather. It's weird to think that in the middle of winter, lettuce grows the best, but it does. Particularly Harting lettuce loves growing in the cool weather. I love mignonette, I love oat leaf, iceberg, and of course the beautiful cos lettuce grows brilliantly during the cooler weather. So I just plant a half a punnet each week, actually, just so I've got all of that lettuce coming into the kitchen gradually, not all at once. Lettuce every meal, for sure, keeps everybody healthy, keeps everybody full of iron and folates and all of those great things that lettuce have. But yeah, that's good. And a lot of the elk lettuce too, the more mustardy greens, have heaps more flavour, that bitter kind of flavour as well, but have more nutrient. They're actually jam-packed with more nutrients and more minerals. So the more bitter tasting the lettuce, the more good it's doing for you and your insides. You can still plant peas at this time of the year if we're still in the veggie patch. There's the potted peas or shelling peas. You can make a wigwam up with a few posts of bamboo, some chicken wire, and just whack in half a packet of shelling pea seeds. They grow beautifully during the winter, and they are so much sweeter than the ones that you buy in the shops because, of course, the sugars haven't converted to starch yet. And so all of our peas are really sweet. Most of them don't come into the kitchen because the kids just eat them straight in the garden. They're that sweet. You can just eat them raw. But just make sure when you're growing any of the peas, whether they're potting peas, the shelling peas, or sugar snap, or the snow pea, make sure you just add a little bit of lime, garden lime or dolomite, to the soil before planting. They just love that little sweetening up. Oh, so now we're in the veggie patch. So that's lots to be doing. And of course, keep liquid feeding your veggies, the kale growing gangbusters. And that's so easy. I love with the kale, just stripping the midrib out, spraying it with olive oil and salt, and then just popping it into an oven 180 degrees for a few minutes to crisp it up. And that's just a really simple little beer snack when I'm watching the netball on a Sunday night, Sunday afternoon, cold beer and my kale chips. And it's just a really great way of getting the kids to eat more kale as well, because it's obviously full of nutrient and lots of minerals as well. So in the veggie patch, that's a great thing to be doing. And also, we do have a question on the Facebook page, which was fantastic. Margaret from Pennant Hills said, I've got two peace lilies, Spathiphyllum, whose flowers start to white and then they turn green. And I love peace lilies, Margaret. And you've got something. Well, the flower's petal is actually the spathe. It's a type of leaf. And so being a leaf, it's not actually a flower. That white spathe or that white wing is actually the leaf, and it's performing photosynthesis. And so it's absorbing the sunlight and it's going green. Most start out green and then open to white and then go green again. But clipping them off at the base can encourage actually new white ones. Moving the plant into lower light, that also can help once the flower buds have formed. But obviously you do need a nice light spot to grow peace lilies, and giving it some slow release or controlled release fertilizer for potted flowering plants is absolutely essential, but I wouldn't do that until September. And then of course all indoor plants can really now withhold water because it's getting too cold really to water them. So all my indoor plants don't get really watered for, you know, 4 or 5 weeks. I really dry them all out. It's really important, I think, to do that. And then we've got another question. Molly from Campbelltown, she's got a very sad magnolia. Now, this is one of the winter magnolias, Magnolia denudata, the white Yulan magnolia. And she says on the Facebook page, so if you do have a question for us on the Garden Clinic, just head to the Garden Clinic Facebook page and write your question out, and I'll get on to answering them on the podcast. Molly says, my magnolia has been struggling for years. It loses leaves, the flowers are scarce, and when they do disappear, they don't last. She said, my soil is clay, so I think drainage is the problem. I did sprinkle gypsum around the trunk on a couple of occasions. She says, my other suspicion is that the original planting hole was too shallow. What do you think? How can I bring my magnolia's splendor? Well, yeah, you might be right about the planting hole and definitely about the clay soil, Molly. Magnolias, deciduous ones, actually sulk for years and years in clay soils. The best solution might be to dig it up and start again. And I would do that now in autumn. So before you do it, water it well the day before moving, and then give it a really big bucket of Sea-Sol seaweed solution, the seaweed tonic. Sea-Sol is a wonderful thing to use when you're transplanting. And then on the day, dig it up, wrap the root ball in a wet towel and keep the tree in the shade, and then re-dig the hole. Dig it deeper, work in a couple of bags of composted cow manure, a couple of good handfuls of gypsum through the top sort of 20 centimetres of the soil. Dig all that through, mound it up better so it's really above the clay table, the substrate, and then plant your magnolia again in that composted, beautiful, fresh, loamy soil that you've added. And stake it and then give it a little bit more sea salt and away you go. Oh, one more question in the garden clinic, and I think we can wrap things up. But now Sharon from Dural writes, can fresh grass clippings be used directly on the garden as mulch? And I think not on their own. I know that when I use grass clippings, or they mat together too much, they dry into a kind of dry, crusty layer, and it stops water from penetrating in, Sharon. So if you can, mix your clippings up with some leaves that fall, you know, from one of the autumn trees in your area. Get a big bag, put the grass clippings in, half fill it with the leaves as well, add a bit of composted blood and bone, a little sprinkle, a little bit of cow manure, and then a little bit more, fill the bag right up to the top, tie it all up, allow it to rot down into a sort of leaf mold mix, and that could take 2 months. And then spring comes, you can get that all out and then just layer it on top of the soil as a wonderful enriched leaf mold layer. And that would be a brilliant way of composting not only autumn leaves but your grass clippings as well. It's so much easier for them to return back into the soil when they're semi-composted. That's Molly's question. Thank you so much for writing a question on the Facebook page. I suppose it's time to also enrich soil in the garden if you're wanting to plant roses, particularly bare-rooted roses in winter, or maybe deciduous blossom trees, a cherry blossom, apple blossom, plum blossom, or fruit trees if you're wanting to plant citrus or apples, pears and cherries. So enrich the soil, dig in generous amounts of compost. We've spoken about creating your own compost system, but also if you don't have compost, just go for aged manure. Cow manure is terrific, and then water the soil well, add some blood and bone, a little bit of dynamic lifter, a little bit of eco hydrate, of course, is great. And I also like to sprinkle in potassium sulfate just to pump up the trace element for all of those fruit and flowering trees. I think that's a really great thing to do before you plant out your trees and shrubs. If you've got proteas at this time of the year, you know, proteas and grevilleas and leucodendrons love flowering in the middle of winter. But I love to pick long-stemmed flowers of them. It does two things. Yes, then you can just enjoy them inside in a vase, but it's also a win-win situation because it gives the plants a light trim, encourages bushier growth, and gives you plenty of bunches of flowers to give away. So protea, leucodendron, and grevillea must be pruned when they're in flower to bush them up. And it's really important not to leave 1 year go by without doing that pruning, because otherwise they get really leggy, really scrappy, and you can't really then prune them back into any kind of nice compact shape. So that's a really good tip, particularly grevilleas at this time of the year. Look, all grevilleas are either flowering now or about to. So grevilleas and Australian native plants, corias, crowias, flannel flowers, banksias, all of the spring wildflowers that are about to come in August, they all need a gentle boost at this time of the year with a native plant food. So choose a specialist native plant food like Osmocote or Nutricote, or go for something like bush tucker. That's excellent to get more flowers of your Australian native plants when spring rolls around. One of my lovely favourite plants for the sort of subtropical Sydney, Brizzy, that kind of climate, is the Brazilian red cloak. It's called Megacaspasma, and it's a hardy shrub with broad leaves and these gigantic bright red pagoda-like flowers, spikes, that are crimson with and red, and got these little kind of white little flowers sticking out of them. And they're an excellent plant for filling in shade and semi-shaded areas. They're a nice big rounded shrub, probably around 2 meters, and really great as a filler. And I love planting them with like other things like justicias, the Brazilian cloak flower, and they're just excellent, bright, bold, subtropical colour that just don't need any care at all. So if you've got a question for us here on the Garden Clinic, it's Linda Ross. Lovely to have your company with me today. Just head over to the Garden Clinic Facebook page and pop your question there, and I'll be able to answer it on our weekly gardening podcasts. And absolute pleasure to answer those questions today. Look, we are coming up to rose pruning time. So in the next podcast or two, we'll be dedicating a whole podcast to roses, new ones for 2018, and how to prune the roses that are already growing in your garden. This is Linda Ross. If you love this podcast, why don't you share it with your friends? Give me a 5-star rating on iTunes. Thanks so much for listening. It's great to have your company. Happy gardening, and go safely. The
best garden. Hi there, Graham Ross. Now, you all know I love gardening, and we all know that Sea Sol is just simply fantastic for keeping your garden healthy and looking great. But did you know that Sea Sol helps with root development? This means that Sea Sol treated plants have a greater access to water and nutrients in the soil. This goes for everything in your garden, from your lawn to your roses, even your veggie patch. So don't just water your garden, Sea Sol your garden.
Don't forget the Sea Sol.